Hey everyone, this is Jim Douglas with the Details by Nest Realty. This week, we were joined by a longtime friend, Greg Fisher of West Main Homes, based in Colorado and Oregon. Greg was one of our earliest guests, all the way back in December of 2019. Greg is always a great conversation, and Jonathan, Keith, and I are thankful for him joining us again. Make sure to stick around for his detail-y sweats. It's a great and meaningful one for the real estate industry. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hey, everybody. Jim Duncan with Nest Sweat the Details, here with Keith and Jonathan. We have Greg Fisher from West Main, far out west. Greg, tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and welcome back to Sweat the Details after many years.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm a independent broker here in Bend, Oregon. I'd take up your whole podcast if we went through everything, but right now I have the privilege of running a brokerage here in Central Oregon with some amazing agents. I have a background in technology. We've spent the last 5 and 7 years growing West of Main as a company. Before that, I've spent time in a few real estate technology startups. I've worked at Realtor.com. The startups I worked on were Doorsteps and Approved, and I've just been excited and happy to work in this real estate industry. I'll be hitting the 20-year mark pretty soon. And I continue to work in this sort of space between brokerage and tech. That's what I do.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, welcome to the 20-year club. I hit it recently, so welcome to that. Let me touch like specifically to start with. Can you tell me about what's happening in your market right now? I mean, I know there's a lot of, you know, I feel like the last 4 years whereas previously we would always say like every market's local. And then the last 4 years has been almost the same market in every part of the country. We're starting to see some breakage from that and markets getting back to local. We're seeing national trends that aren't hitting on some local markets and some local market trends that don't seem to be kind of getting nationally. But I'd love to hear from where you are in Central Oregon about how your market's going so far in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're a little behind everybody else as far as new activity goes. The number of sales is the story. I mean, we're so below typical, or at least recent typical levels. We put out the last monthly report just yesterday. So, you know, January 24 in Bend, which is a town of 110,000 people, had 89 sales. In December 2 years ago, it was double that. So I think that's really the name of the game here. I think the movement in real estate transactions came to a screeching halt during this high mortgage rate environment. And we haven't quite seen the signs of that changing, like I've seen in some of our other markets, like Denver, where we have a very large presence. We have seen lots of showings, we've seen some multiple offers, and you can feel the activity happening. In Central Oregon, where I am and where I spend most of my time, we're not quite there yet. We've seen it here and there, especially with just your kind of typical median priced inventory, but very slow. Very hopeful. We are a seasonal market anyway. This is the kind of place that people love to come in the winter. They love to come in the summer. And then sometimes it's a little slower in these shoulder seasons. So I think we're still kind of like looking to see when we might get a nice little change. But yeah, very, very slow on the number of sales.
Yeah, but that actually makes me feel a little bit better, because in most of our markets, and I know you kind of operate, I know you operate in several markets across the country, big market and small market, with Denver and kind of Bend as two examples of that. But what we're seeing in the markets where we operate is our small to mid-sized markets are lagging behind what we're hearing from, you know, our friends at Altos Research. And Mike Simonson is saying, you know, inventory so far this year is up 8% plus year over year, and we're just not seeing it. So I'm kind of interested to see if we're getting back to where things seem like they were in the mid, you know, 2014, 15, 16, where these small to mid-sized markets were 6 to 9, 12 months lagging behind big city USA. So anyways, it's interesting to hear that you're running into the same situation that we are in our small to mid-sized markets.
Yeah, and the prices have kind of hung around, you know. I mean, there hasn't been much of a decline there. So that's always the hard part on the consumer side to sort of explain. And we have to look at all of these different details to provide a shape for our consumers and for our friends and for our neighbors, and trying to help them understand, because they might hear one metric like the total sales are down, but then they don't see any relief in the prices, right? So it has been a time to really take a full look at a market when we're talking to other people.
Yeah, interestingly, and you know, across all of our markets, we have not had any that I've heard reports of that we've actually seen any price declines at all in. We've got some that have started slowing in their price increases, but even, you know, even our small markets, the city of Charlottesville is up 9% this year, year over year, which is just a crazy big number. And hearing you say that a community of 100,000 with 80 plus sales in a month, we've got 45,000 in the city of Charlottesville for a residential population, and we have 16 listings on the market in the entire city right now. So it's a weird market to try and explain to anybody who's wanting to look at houses.
Oh. Yeah. It's again, for me, I think it's the, you know, closing on this topic with commiseration is that you see the I think calculated risk in NAR said, you know, I saw that story saying that inventory is up 12% nationwide, which kind of makes me want to beat my head against the wall because we're just not seeing it.
Well, that would be two listings in Charlottesville. Yeah. I mean, so, hey.
So yeah, it's, you know, it's challenging to understand the market and more challenging to explain it to those who step into this world every 5 to 10 years to frame. I think the way I like the way you said that, I'm going to use that, you know, sort of to tell the picture of the market for each of these people. It's a different picture. And it's a different story for each one. Yeah. So shifting real quick, you know, what are you seeing in the tech space, Greg? And one of the things as we were sort of, you know, thinking about what we're going to chat about today, it's, you know, we're all sort of, you know, tangentially, you know, tech and real estate sort of on that balance. What's a tech that you'd love to see come around that's been, you know, sort of on your periphery or just your wishful thinking about what a tech is that would make the brokers and consumers' lives, you know, more interesting and more productive?
Oh, the softball question.
Well, yeah, I'm going to start out easy.
Yeah. You know, I think honestly, my wish is for our existing vendor set to take us more seriously. I am constantly disappointed in the tools that I see around us in their iteration cycles and in their offerings, the stuff that we've come to rely on. And now when we talk about being in the industry 20 years, I can think of, you know, more than 10 technologies that we use that haven't been different in that time. And so to me, that's probably the thing that grinds my gears and makes me want to see something new. I was talking to some folks the other day. I was at a MLS board meeting, and some of my colleagues have been in the industry longer than I. And one of the things we were commiserating about the MLS books, which I never had to use. And I mentioned that I had always used CoreLogic Matrix as an MLS system at some point, and that's always been the same. I've always used DocuSign since the beginning, and that's always been the same. And there's always this, you know, there's comfort in technology that doesn't change too much, especially when you rely on it for such critical pieces of your flows, such as MLS technology and e-signatures. But at the same time, you know, as our businesses develop and as the agents develop and as the consumer technology they use changes, we always hope that the core tools that we use at least meet some kind of standard along that timeline. And so I would have to say that I really, really hope for and look for some of those core tools to just see big iterative cycles. I think a lot of our vendors have gotten comfortable. They know they have a captive audience. And while I know we might not get into specifics of like the legal environment in real estate, I do think there's going to be some pressure as some of the downfall of how the infrastructure of the realtor associations and the MLS work and how brokerages look that are going to force this to finally happen. And so if I was going to say one new technology that I think would be cool, I could reference, I don't know if you've ever heard of Lundy, but it's a voice activated search, has an Alexa skill. The founder, Justin, is incredibly talented. And I think that things like that are kind of interesting and cool. We've always been so focused on, what does the person who does have all of their senses see and how do they interact with real estate? And we've politicized real estate search so much, but there's also these sort of long tail derivative experiences that we haven't even thought of. How could somebody with a visual impairment experience real estate in an interesting way? And that's such a diametrically opposed to, like, we just got the new Apple device and we're looking at how's real estate going to look on there. And so I do think, some niche ideas like that are kind of cool, because I don't want to sidestep your question. I would say something like that is very cool, but I'm very, very interested in our in these core vendor tools being challenged themselves. I don't even know if I care if it's the same vendors and the same companies. I just want to see version twos and version threes and such.
It is interesting because everybody, all four of us have backgrounds in the startup world outside of real estate and or at least outside of brokerage real estate. And we've all talked about the innovator's dilemma and the fact that once you come up with something that's creative, you really have an incentive not to spend but so much money changing it. And I think our technology buying power as an industry is a small, relative to other tech stuff. It's a relatively small piece, and so we don't have people wanting to go out on their own and do just crazy innovative stuff, and so when you're talking about using the AI or using Lundy, and I remember hearing or seeing a demo of his several years ago, and I would thought that is the coolest thing, but yet you've got to get enough adoption to be able to make it really take off, and that's I think it does. It hinders our vendor partners from wanting to make these giant leaps. And, that's what puts you and us into a category of wanting to design our own tech stacks and doing things that maybe have minuscule improvements to what's out there, but it helps our agents, our clients, and we do it in smaller, more disaggregated ways.
I'd even jump in. Go ahead, Greg.
No, I was just gonna say, I sat with Keith, a few months ago, and we were at this Showing Time Plus event. And I listened to him talk about some of the Nest infrastructure, and it just reminded me that a lot of times we're talked to, we're pitched to, but I have to tell you and acknowledge that I don't get as visible as you all are, and I am sometimes, despite sometimes not wanting to be. I don't have people coming to my office and watching us use technology. I don't have people like asking me for feedback or like watching me user test and such. And so I think that's why you're driven to make these solutions, is because that's what it really takes. And in my time working in technology startups, we did so much of that, not only in the beginning to kind of make first early versions of technology, but forever as an infinite sort of behavior pattern. And I don't see that. And I'm very open and available to do that. The reason I was at that Showing Time event is I am on their advisory board and I do get to do some of that work for them, which I think is nice. And probably another reason I feel that from the rest of the vendor stack. But when I listened to Keith talk about your back office system, it just made me realize too, I had so much enjoyment out of that conversation, and he was able to explain how you arrived at some of these conclusions. And the only way you can arrive at them is watching your end users do the work by asking them questions and trying your best to solve their pain. And I don't think that environment exists for us right now with our current large sort of vendor stack. So I just wanted to say, it just reminded me when I was visiting with Keith a few months ago.
I think I appreciate that comment. I think one of the unfortunate stagnations where we are right now with tech is based on a couple things. One is, as we know, like, money's dried up for a lot of these companies. And so funding is hard to get to. So therefore, when you don't have funding, you got to figure out, how do we bootstrap this? And maybe we got to cut back on some innovation. The second is, I'm imagining realtor spend has also stopped. So maybe funding has stopped and revenues are pulled back a little bit. And the third part of it is, you know, unfortunately, most of these, look, this is a generalized statement, but I should say a lot of these tech vendors, they start this product with the goal of being acquired in 2 to 3 years. So, you know, when that's the goal, you only want to reach a certain level of coolness and revenues. And it's like, all right, let's sell. And then if that doesn't happen, it's like, all right, what do we have to do now? So I think we're at this spot now in 2024 where we're at this confluence where all three of those situations is really hurting tech vendors. And you look, realistically, I would imagine this, you know, compared to the last couple of years, we're in kind of a desert right now of innovation. I don't expect there to be a ton of innovation across the board. That said, when innovation backs off with the masses of tech vendors, that gives an opportunity for one or two or three to step forward and like be the shining light and really get some exposure and some adoption. So that, you know, speaking very generally, and I don't know what the specifics are, but that's kind of the exciting thing to me right now, is if we clear out through a lot of this noise and through some of these systems which may not have had the right end goal in mind, which was, you know, how do we help realtors become better at what they do or provide a better consumer experience or things like that, cut through the noise a little bit. I have a feeling that when we look back on 2024, there's going to be a couple that stand out and it's like, man, that, look at that. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, I was going to echo that. I think that this kind of, you know, the technological desert is ripe for one or two individual companies to come out and just blow things out of the water. Because I think when you have less competition and less chaff, if you will, in the tech environment, you know, it's kind of exciting to think about what might come out of it. I don't know what that is right now. I mean, I think that it's going to be tied in some capacity to, you know, AI is the buzzword on everything, but I think that any good tech, you know, ultimately it becomes super successful when it's mostly invisible. And you read a lot about what Apple's doing and how they're you know, they're very tacitly mentioning AI as they evolve, but it's been in Siri and it's been in their stuff for years, and it's just an invisible tech. So I think that we're going to see, you know, I'd like to think that we're going to see two or three things come out of 2024 or 2025 that will change, not the game or the conversation, but the agents who are out there and the brokerages who are out there that are still super productive as we make it through this slow sales environment, which we're going to be in for at least a, you know, few weeks and months to come, you know, are going to provide opportunities for people to really excel in this new world.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is just listening to Jonathan talk about the money drying up and what's happening. That would kind of lead you to think that over the last 3 years, while money hasn't been dried up, that we would have seen dramatic shifts of innovation and companies reinvesting. And we didn't see it then either. Well, we saw companies trying again to create the acquirable product. And we are watching still some of the larger firms, the lone wolves who are doing tech roll-ups, and they're starting to really integrate their stacks together, which is a nice, which is nice for all of us to be able to have less logins, more, you know, continuity between products. But I think I look at some of the massive vendors in our marketplace and think it amazes me. And I know the expense is huge, so I mean, I understand why it's happening, but even products like, you know, Bright MLS, which I think is second or third largest in the US right now, still relies upon CoreLogic with Matrix for their actual interface. The thing, so you know, we talk about MLS and people who are not even the realtors are hard pressed to define. Most average realtors are hard pressed to define between the interface that they utilize and the actual MLS that underlies, and whether we're talking about the data or the product of usability. And I think it's amazing that that something that has tremendous value in our marketplace still relies upon a third party to actually create the experience for the user. And that, I think, is a wild kind of that, why that hasn't shifted, I'm not sure I understand.
You know, Greg, as he's talking and as we're, you know, one of the most valuable skill sets that a good agent, I think, can bring to the table is the ability to, and this is not taught in anything that I was ever trained in. It was certainly not in the real estate book 20 some odd years ago, but it is understanding the human aspect of it and hearing the buyers or the sellers really discuss and come to terms with what they actually need and want and set those expectations for their needs, wants, goals, et cetera. So, I think that the word I've heard in for years, but in the last few days has really come to a head is curation. You know, hearing the client discuss and define what they want, you know, massaging that, if you will, and then curating that into a search or into the next stage of their lives. Is there any way that you can foresee that curation becomes scalable beyond the individual relationships?
That's such a good question, because it's the battle between your sort of technology audience who wants to automate out the individual agents and people that are required to do this massive piece of the economy, and the value that those individual people find and the inspiration that they find to try this career. I always love when there are unscalable pieces of a business, because it always brings about the hardest working people, because there's eventually some, you know, there's some barrier, some fence that you get to where there may not be a way to automate or to streamline a process. And so sometimes, in my opinion, I think that's what helps bring the type of tenacious people that want to work inside of real estate, because they see that there is this opportunity to hand curate and to do this unscalable work. And also is a value proposition, and also something that ties in, again, I guess I'm gonna force you guys to at least go around the boundary of the legal environment in real estate, but it's also something that helps highlight agency and what true fiduciary means. And when you have to hand curate and do individual work for somebody, it helps reestablish that relationship and what it truly means to represent somebody's best interests. Because when we're advocating for somebody and we're listening to them and then using our skills and abilities to find things that would benefit them or speak to their interests or speak to their needs or speak to their sometimes, you know, almost inconquerable circumstances, which a lot of times real estate is, especially in the last year and a half, it sort of then highlights that the role that our agents take on is a very serious one. And it's one where who else is going to stand up for you and do something that you either don't have the knowledge to do yourself, you don't have the time or the expertise to do yourself. So I always revel in these little moments, and it's the things that kind of like keep my little smirk about me when I hear what some, you know, new people who discover the industry think they're going to be able to do with technology. And you know, when we were talking earlier, I had tweeted out that story that I wrote a long time ago about this unzillable aspects of real estate. And I am never, you know, I'm never shy to say, well, that's where our human workforce steps in. And so I do think there are ways to, of course, streamline that and automate and scale. But at the same time, I also find strength and reminder that the roles that we take on are serious agent-related duties. And that makes me proud and happy and reminds me why we're even in this business in the first place.
Yeah, I love that. And I actually look at innovation as being, there's a couple different types of innovation. One is streamlining and systematizing and, you know, for efficiency. And I think it was Henry Ford that made the comment years ago when he created his assembly line. He's like, you can have any color car you want as long as it's black, right? So it's like putting out the same thing in efficiencies. And then the flip side, something that we talk about a lot here, and I'm sure you probably say the same thing to your management team and agents in a similar way, is like, do things that don't scale. Like, this is what gives us the ability to differentiate, be unique, and have a little bit of patina to our brand and to our service. And if we're constantly focused on scale, and we're not, right, you got to do some things efficiently. But like looking at things and saying, like, do things that don't scale. Like, what can Zillow not do? What can, you know, big brokerage ABC not do that we can do? And like, that's one of our points of differentiation.
So it's interesting. We have, you know, I got into this business before we had any national builders that were actually building in our marketplace. And so we had tons of local construction companies building new homes and townhouses and doing the condo renovation work. And then we started seeing, as every community did, the national home builders started coming in. And what was fascinating was watching the way the different builders responded to that, right? Some just said, you know what, I've got my niche. I'm going to keep doing what I do, and I'm going to keep building something that is, you know, speaks in a architectural vernacular of our region. We're going to keep building homes that fit with Charlottesville, and clearly were, you know, described here for generations. And then there were others who said, we're going to compete with the big boys. And that is a difficult path to be in, because you end up playing a game that you're not really set up to do. And I think to Jonathan's point, we as agents, we have relationships, and that is what drives every bit of our business. And we continue to focus on how do we stay human and how do we stay involved in the family lives of our clients. And we as brokers, how do we stay involved in our agents' lives? And how do we keep those relationships going? Because that is what differentiates us from every bit of AI and really allows us to help people accomplish the dreams they're looking for. Because it's understanding what they're not saying that's every bit as important.
Yeah. Hey, Greg, I want to like drill this in and maybe ask a question tied to a lot that we've talked about. We've talked about low inventory and sales hard to come by. We've talked a little bit about tech, and we've talked about kind of scaling, and maybe we could extrapolate that to, you know, big brokerage versus indie broker, and you guys are indie brokers. With where you are right now with your company and your agents, tell me what your agents need and how you're meeting those needs right now, kind of as an indie broker and the market that we're in with low inventory and tech kind of fluff out there. What are you guys doing that's supporting your agents that maybe you could talk about, you feel comfortable talking about?
Sure. You know, one thing that this market has done is help give brokers like us an opportunity to really fine tune and decide how we're going to appear for the next 10 years as we move out of it. It really has forced us, this legal environment, to really hit on training and this agency relationship and how critical and important it is to be knowledgeable and up to speed on the services that we're providing to people. And so I think our ability to not only train, which is just a core tenet of all brokerage, especially smaller indies, but to sort of, you know, provide other assets that our agents haven't always had. And so for one, we're very much focused on telling the story of what buyer agency is and the value that's created by those services. And we've been creating assets and looking at technology that'll help our agents tell that story a little better. Because sometimes, just like with any skill, those things become inherent and they're baked into what you do. And sometimes it is hard for them to explain. So I think what we've been focused on the last 6 months or so is what sort of sales enablement assets, what kind of technology, and then what story can we help tell as the brokerage? And, you know, I always view our brokerages in many different ways, but one similarity that I like to put out there is like a record label. And so what's the label saying about the talent right now? And what are all of our agents in a position to do right now? And for them, it's to be highly educated and efficient in how to provide buyer agency services at a moment when the value of those services is misunderstood or not understood or being brought into question, and giving them the language and the assets to promote those services in a way that is transparent and wants, you know, creates a desire for people to work with them. And so I'd say, yeah, right now in this exact moment, that's something we're super focused on. But also, you know, it gives us a moment to be lean and to create a new identity, not a new identity, but maybe to highlight a part of our identity that's always existed. And to demonstrate that the people that we have, the people that we attract, and the work that we do is very focused on this professional proficiency of the agency services. And so that's really where my head's been at the last few months. And then on top of that, to kind of layer in the tech, I've been really excited and pleased, to be honest with you, with some of our lead generation efforts that fall outside of this old model of pay-per-click and hoping, you know, that we get somebody's accurate contact info. And in this down market, doing something like Zillow Flex, which is less, maybe we can focus less on the company and more on the flow, where people that we don't know, you know, a lot of our business for agents is people that they already know. But for the business with people that we don't know yet, that we're trying to earn, it has been very, very impactful to our agents to be able to be in a system where they just answer the phone and somebody on the other side of that, like, wanted to talk to them and they're live connected. And so that's been something that I've put my resources and my personal capital, whatever's left, into, because in a low sales environment, we've needed and wanted for ways to maybe find some additional transactions for some of our agents. And that's been a really effective way to do it, because like I said, in the past, we're just hoping people have traded their accurate contact info, and then, you know, they get a bunch of emails and outbound calls. Whereas today, our agents are able to answer the phone and talk to somebody who's bona fide and ready to go. And I think that experience is better for everybody, but it's certainly less emotional labor for the agents than they used to do years ago, where they just had this list of people that may have indicated interest of looking at real estate, and they're going through all these methodical processes, just hoping somebody actually wants to work with them. And our agents are so awesome and nice, and they're real people who are trying to support themselves and or their families and create a life or create wealth or just survive, to be honest, most of the times. And so that's been something that I've been excited about and spent time on too.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Greg, I think that's the end point. Is, you know, I think we're dealing with humans in every aspect of what we do, and the tech that we have helps the agents, helps the brokers, helps the consumers better do what they need to do, regardless of what it is. I think it's a matter of knowing what technology there is out there, applying it effectively, and testing constantly to make sure that what you have is efficient and productive and works, and also make sure you're streamlined. And I think 24 is going to be a year of lean in a lot of ways, from inventory, from sales, from brokerage, from, you know, packing lunch occasionally and drinking less coffee. So I think it's going to be an exciting year in many ways. Yeah, cheaper coffee, marginally cheaper coffee. You know, but I think it's going to be an interesting year in many ways. But Jonathan, do you have your closing question? I want to push to you.
Yeah, and like I'll say this, and this may be just kind of piggybacking off what you just said, but it, you know, I really appreciate the transparency of what you're working on right now. And you know, from our end, we're working extremely hard, specifically kind of on some buyer agency assets, just like you saw, education, you know, the history of agency, making sure people understand, like our agents understand the history of agencies so they can walk their clients through the process and get to the point where they explain the value of representation. So along those lines, like anything else, like what's the, and it may be what you just touched on, but like, what's the one detail that you're sweating, you know, like right now, maybe beyond those two things, or maybe it's just one of those two.
Yeah, no, there's a crisis in our industry right now. And it is that there is not enough youth involved in the back end of how this industry works, whether it be on the MLS side or in the realtor organizations or in leadership at the brokerages. And this becomes so evident to me every time I'm in those rooms. And we've got to make space for people to rise up. And sometimes making space means sitting down. As tough as that is, we all grasp onto power and we all grasp onto, you know, our ability to be in rooms or to be on microphones. And I'm, you know, I'm always happy to talk and share my insights, but, you know, I think at this point I would call it a crisis because I feel the old cruft. I feel the dogma. I see the old technology out there and a slow response to change. And, you know, it's taken 20 years to maybe get this 360 degree view of how our slice of the world works, at least in a way that I'm very confident that I understand. Of course, I don't know all of it, and I have some gaps in understanding still. But I think I really want to do whatever I can. Maybe this will be the moment that I'm putting it on paper. But we need to bring new voices into the light and to empower them, and officially too. They should be on boards. They should be in leadership roles. Because if we're not getting what we need, it's our own fault. If we're the ones that are in these rooms, or we're the ones that are on these boards or in these positions. And so you have to be on it, intellectually honest enough to look inward and say, well, I've been here and I'm not getting what I want. And so what's my role in that? And so, I think we need to be able to make room for the, it reminds me in the military, I worked on helicopters, and I continued some work when I left, and there was this huge crisis in the helicopter world, especially for pilots, because the cohort of pilots at the time were all trained and learned their skills during the Vietnam War. So if you can imagine, all the pilots we had for helicopters had all come in at the same time. And then as we got into the 2000s and beyond to these subsequent decades, we hadn't refilled the pipeline of people that were going to do the next generation of work. And so I think our industry, when it comes to these larger institutions or larger technology companies even, need a fresh set of faces and ideas that are empowered and not on the outside looking in. So I think I have to do something about that besides, you know, say it here today. So I think that's what I'm sweating.
Awesome. I love it. I don't remember your exact answer when you were on last time, but I remember leaving that conversation saying, I love his answer to sweat the details. And I'm going to say that again. I love that response. I think that, you know, the four of us work together to bring, God, I used to be young. But to bring the younger folks into our world to make it a better place for the world and for the real estate world. So, Greg, thanks so much for making the time today. Really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg. It's awesome. Good catching up.
Look forward to seeing you again soon, man.
Yeah, I'll see you guys soon.
Thanks, Greg. Really, really appreciate it.